The Michigan State University Science Festival continues through this weekend. Tonight, a familiar voice will speak at Kellogg Center as part of the festival, Robert Krulwich. And Current State's Melissa Benmark got to talk with Robert Krulwich earlier this week. He is an intriguing guy to listen to on the radio, one of the most intriguing, interesting people.
And talking to him is an incredibly wonderful experience.
I'm sure.
It's fair to say that his bio reads like a who's who of journalism. He's co-host of NPR's Radio Lab, is an NPR science correspondent, author of the blog Krulwich Wonders on NPR, which is very much worth checking out. He's on Morning Edition and All Things Considered, ABC. He's worked for PBS, CBS, Rolling Stone, gotten all of the major journalism awards. He even draws his own pictures on this blog.
Wow, polymath.
The man can do pretty much everything. And he got his start as a broadcaster actually very early in his life.
I was about 5 or 6 and kind of into reciting what I'd done during the day. I think at that point I was taking my own baths. My mom wasn't bathing me anymore. So I used to tell her, I guess. I don't remember what I'd done. So then I just began to tell myself by creating a microphone with my fist and putting it to my mouth and then getting low in the water of the bathtub so that I could see my reflection in the chrome that immediately surrounded the faucet. So it was me with an elephant's nose, kind of. But then I invented a radio station in which I was Don Roberto, and the opening of the station was around the corner, around the nation, around the world. This is Don Roberto with all the news that is the news, or something like that. And then I would then tell them stories about myself. So that was rather early.
That's marvelous.
And then years and years later, you'd go on in the Chicago Theater or something, which is a huge theater, 300,000 people looking at you, and you'd go on and they would go, yay. And oddly enough, I found that, I don't know how to say this, I found it okay. It was wonderful to have real people in front of you, but it was nothing like being in the bathtub and having the universe. I think the bathtub audience was, I think, the entire universe. And they also weren't really real, so I felt completely glorious as Don Roberto. As the real me, I don't know. It was just different.
You've done political reporting, economics, business reporting, written interest rate operas. And now you're doing science reporting. What do you think is the hardest of the bunch to report on well?
Oh, I think military. I think covering wars is very, very difficult because they're unfolding. They're much larger than you are. And then the people who are fighting them are just not all that available to tell you their story because surprise elements and frankly, strategy and technology are very much part of warfare. So whether it's the asymmetrical warfare we're fighting now, we are working on some pieces about that at the very moment. But it's actually interesting because there's a lot of data in current warfare. There's a lot of data mining and computer stuff and lawyering. So different. But in hot wars, which I've covered a few of, then those are very, very difficult because you're just another reporter. And I think if you go to be a White House reporter, there's something hard about that because there are 80 of them or 100 of them. And you're sort of shoulder to shoulder to shoulder to shoulder to shoulder to shoulder, and you're watching the president's press secretary say blah, blah, blah. So you can write down blah, 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 but so are 79 other people. So then you ask that metaphysical question, like, why am I here? So covering presidents and covering soldiers is, I think, pretty hard. But covering science, totally wonderful, actually.
What was your relationship with science when you were growing up?
Very distant. My worst grade was chemistry by far. I remember taking my chemistry final and thinking, I don't understand any of this. I mean, I'm just good enough to like write down what I supposedly learned, but really it's like, you know, if you were a Roman Catholic and you were just reciting the Mass in Latin, I have no idea what you're saying. Mm-hmm. It's very close to that. Like I knew the words, but I had no idea what I was saying. And biology was a little bit more fun. And frankly, when Algebra 2 came along, I nearly died. But I was a history major, and I think I was a history major because I loved stories. And frankly, history just seemed to me the and then and then and then and then subjects. And I'm fine with that. I love finding out what happens next. And all these people were dead, so there was always an answer. So I love that. And I stayed away from it. I stayed away from economics. And then when I became an adult and began working, I don't quite know why. I think the rest of my life has been a compensation for my education. What I knew and loved very well at school, I have employed only a little bit in my adult life. And what I hated and feared and didn't want to go near in school, math, science, and economics, has been where I spent most of, just kind of weird, but that's what happened.
It almost sounds like you became the kind of storytelling teacher that you kind of wished you would have had.
Or that I had to be for myself. I mean, it was very easy for me. Almost the beginning of my journalism career, I was already doing what I do now. I was just trying to figure stuff out because I spent much of the time when I was younger not knowing what was happening. And instead of being intimidated by that and thinking, well, I'll never know, my parents gave me at least, you know, my sister has this too. I think we both felt that we were entitled to know, but we would have to figure out a way to learn on our own because we were differently wired or something, and we just weren't fast.
Hmm. So we're in this kind of strange time historically, speaking to a history major, where we're simultaneously looking at some, you know, fairly disturbing things like climate change and drug-resistant bacteria. And yet, honestly, it seems like you can't really pick up a paper without someone in a position of prominence saying that science is essentially a dirty word.
Well, I think what's going on there is that a group of people who grew up with a rhythm and a world that they understood and they were told about, which they learned in stories, really, in routines. Here's this science stuff, and it feels like the scientists don't want to explain, they just want to tell you, and it feels that the scientists have a version of the world which might deny the things that you really care about, which is your sense of meaning, that you're living a life with some kind of purpose, that there is maybe a reward in heaven or some kind of logic to explain the why you're here. And if science were to tell the story, you would feel somehow the logic of you would be taken from you and you would be poorer to know that stuff. That the things you value, a religious sense, a reason to be, that those things scientists might take from you. So there's a certain hostility. And it is true to a point that scientists, when they look about, don't always look for the same things that ordinary people look for. They don't look for a meaning. They just look for a logic and that the meaning is the logic in a way. They find the complexity of the world so beautiful that sort of satisfies them. But for many, many people, they need more than that. They need to know why life is so brief, why terrible things happen to nice people, where does love come from, what is our reward for going through a lot of pain. These are very, very serious questions. And I think that the scientists sometimes forget that the logic of that world is smaller than the logic of ordinary people's experience. That said, the things that scientists discover, everybody uses. Everybody takes antibiotics, and everybody knows that sometimes bugs get the better of the medicines, and they say, oh, I don't believe in evolution, but I guess I better take a new antibiotic because that flu is getting around the medicine. That's just because the flu has evolved a resistance. So they're all Darwinian. They just don't realize it. Or they get on planes, which look extraordinarily heavy, and those planes take off and fly through the air. There's no obvious reason why something that heavy, just by going fast and by having wings shaped a certain way, will just lift off. It's amazing. Or to see a huge boat not sink. And people sort of are spoiled, I think, by the gifts that scientists give them. And so I think that here's what scientists and science lovers ought to do, is they ought to tell stories just as good as Bible stories and just as good as movie stories and just as good as great myths and just as good at the Aesop's fables. They should be, because those stories are just as good. They're fascinating. You know, if I tell you why a cloud full of water, which weighs hundreds of tons, why doesn't it fall down on the ground? That's an interesting question. And if I can give you a sober and interesting answer, it's probably, to know the answer to why clouds don't fall down is as interesting to many, many people, if they have the time to understand it, as, you know, why am I here? What is the purpose of things? It may not be as fundamental, but it's good storytelling. And I think that science needs to learn the habit of being beautiful in the same way that religion and myth and other things have found wonderful ways to be beautiful. People need beautiful explanations. They just do. And I think Radiolab is intentionally exploring that world in order to find, sometimes our stories are pretty ugly, but they're beautiful ugly. You know, they're mm-hmm. well made. And we're very aware that we are competing. And part of the competition, not to get too all over this, is about freedom. There have been periods in life when religious beliefs have been subjected to the tyranny of the state, and you're not allowed to have certain beliefs. And there have been martyrs to those beliefs. Jesus was a martyr to a belief like that. Like, you can't think that way. We're going to kill you. And in parts of the world now, scientists are being chased around the block for having beliefs that threaten the state in other ways. And the defense in both cases is to stand up and say, no, this is worth telling. This is beautiful. Here I stand. If scientists don't fight for beauty with their stories, I think they could lose their freedom to explore the world. Those freedoms are granted, and they're tentative. And there have been periods of time where science has not been allowed to do. Galileo, periods in the Soviet Union, some things, but currently in Turkey, and more here and there. So it's a real honest-to-good war, but it's about freedom, I think, more than anything else. And in that sense, we take it very, very seriously. Our show is fun, but it's also deeply, deeply serious and deeply aware that to talk about the world is to take a sword and go into battle in the world. And we are a sword of sorts.
Robert Krulwich, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
For Current State, I'm Melissa Benmark.